Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I tell you, I am so excited about the show today. We're going to talk a lot about fabric with several different quilters that is just, you know, an amazing amount of information today. But I'm going to start out the show with scrap quilts. I have Lynn Roddy Brown, who is the author of several books on scrap quilting. The latest is called Patchwork Play Quilts from Martingale. And I've read through the book, and she's just got excellent, excellent information about how to make really wonderful scrap quilts. So hi, Lynn. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Pat. Nice to be here.
Oh, this is so much fun. You know, your book is excellent. You did
Thank you. Great job. Thank you. I have good editors. It always helps.
Yeah, that always helps. So let's talk a little bit. You know, you were telling me that you didn't publish your first book until right after your 60th birthday. So what went on in your life that all of a sudden you were looking to write a quilt book?
Well, it was a lot of things that came together. I think I had quit working, and I had been quilting a lot of years. And what really was a factor was that Pat Speth came to my guild and said she just decided to write a book, and she did it. And I thought, well, maybe I can do that too. And so I talked to her in the workshop, and she told me, you get on the web page and the book, you know, the company you would like to work with, and they tell you what you have to do. So I wrote a proposal. It took me 6 months, but I got it done, and they took it. So
wow.
Something I had never planned to do.
Did you have a whole lot of quilt ideas sort of already in your head that you thought, you know, hey, these would be good together?
Yes. I think that was what finally happened, was I finally decided, I had given a lecture for our daytime guild here in Houston, and when I did that, I sorted out the quilts and looked at them and thought about what I was going to lecture about, and I decided at that point maybe I did have something to say. Before that, I hadn't really thought I did have anything that would make a book. So it was that lecture that sort of organized my thoughts.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So, you know, you had things going on, and you know, your books are just marvelous. Your whole idea about how to work with scraps is really neat. So let's talk about that. First of all, how did you get sort of a passion for scrap quilts? Did you start out making scrap quilts?
It did happen very early. It started with Sharon Craig. She was the second class I took through the Houston Quilt Guild, and it just opened up a whole world to me. And so after that, I sort of decided that quilts that weren't scrap quilts were a little boring, because I can play with so many different fabrics, and the possibilities are just endless. I mean, you can have blocks, and then they can be straight set, they can be put on point, or you can frame them or use an alternate block. They're just playing with the possibilities is what I really love.
Yeah, your quilts have that sort of quality that just makes them sing. They have a lot of color going on, but not every single one of them is multiple colors. So you work in, you know, sort of controlled scraps or not controlled scraps. They're just gorgeous.
I think I have control issues. Serious control issues that have, I've loosened up. If you look through my three books in the order they were written, I think you can see that I have loosened up. I think you have to be confident at what you are doing and then let yourself go out a little bit.
And, you know, I was reading the introduction, Lynn, to the latest book, the Patchwork Play Quilts. And what I really liked is you gave a little analogy about sort of having to learn to appreciate a certain style. You talked about going to hear, I think it was the opera or classical music, and you didn't understand it, so you didn't know really where you are, you know, what you were listening to. Same with scrap quilts.
I think all things in life, the more we understand about them, the more we can appreciate them. And when I talk to beginning quilters, I realize that they walk into a quilt show and they're not looking for the block. I mean, they don't understand, you know, if I go to the corner, I can find the block and then I can figure out how in the world this quilt went together. And so it was a long process. The first scrap quilt I got was given to me by my husband's grandmother, and I did not appreciate it at all. Mm-hmm. And she's up in heaven now, and I hope to heaven's sakes that she knows that I now appreciate her quilt. I have been using it in a lecture recently called Scrap Quilts, an Acquired Taste.
Hey, that's a good name. That's a great name for it.
It has been a long process, and like I say, my scrap quilts have gotten scrappier. The more I learn, then the more I can make. And I think what a quilter has to do is decide, I want them to understand how they go together and what makes one scrap quilt scrappier than another, and decide how scrappy a quilt they want to make so that they can make the quilt that they want.
That they want. Yeah, you're a good proponent about being sure that you really love your quilt.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I keep them on the design wall until I am happy with them. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to sew a quilt together that I'm not really pleased with. And so with scraps, your options are open. You can add, if it looks dull, throw in some red, some gold, some teal. Mm-hmm. If it's too bright, throw in some grayed fabric, a blue-gray, will tone it down. And so you can change the whole feel of a scrap quilt while it's on the wall.
And Design walls are so important to be able
absolutely.
To step back and look at your work.
Yes,
now, you have a little thing called the three Vs.
The three Vs.
Yeah, tell me about that.
The first one is value. The pattern in scrap quilts is created by the differences in light and dark, or the differences in value. When you look at a four patch, it will have two dark patches and two light patches. That's the difference in those patches. The value creates that four patch pattern. So value is the first V. And then I have what I call visual texture, and that is stripes, plaids, polka dots, vines, paisleys. I like a lot of visual texture in my quilts. My chair is 15 feet from my design wall, and I like to be able to see that visual texture from that distance.
Oh, okay. So like when you say stripe, you want a decent stripe, not something really tone-on-tone.
No, I don't really use very many tone-on-tones. If there is a tone-on-tone is like a print that has a dark purple and a light purple. Now, mm-hmm. if there's enough contrast within that piece, it will create a texture. But mm-hmm. if they're too close or if it's too small from a distance, you can't see that texture. And that's really important to me.
Yeah, because they'll read solid from a distance.
Yes, they read solid. And then I don't use many solids in my quilts either, mm-hmm. unless it's a certain spot that in all of the blocks I put a solid black in that mm-hmm. position so that it helps hold the quilt together. But I rarely use solids or tone-on-tones.
And then you have one more V in your trilogy here.
Variety.
Variety.
Lots of variety. Many different fabrics. The more the better.
So 100. Do you worry about whether fabrics are from sort of different styles? Like would you put like a cottagey fabric next to a Civil War, next to a Disney print kind of thing?
I have done that. I think what you cannot do, well, I'd hate to say what you can't do, because then I see a quilt that it works.
Right, right.
I'm always surprised sometimes at the rules I make for myself, and then I see someone that broke them, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But you can't have 90% of a quilt be Civil War reproduction and then throw a bright children's orange polka dot into the middle of it. Mm-hmm. But if you have about a third of Civil War and a third of children's brides and a third of just general scraps so that you can scatter them, I find it works pretty well. And if the pieces are smaller, if you're cutting 6-inch squares so that the fabrics are very obvious, I don't think that works as well. One of the quilts I have is little strips that are 2 by 5 inches finished, and that's the one that has a lot of different fabrics in it.
Ah, so they're thinner.
They're smaller. And the old string quilts, you can just put about anything in a string quilt because the pieces are smaller, and there's many of them so that they blend together.
Right. And moving things around is pretty important, so you don't, like, clump a whole bunch of colors in one corner, isn't it?
No. That gets to be the control issue.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on the one, and that's one of the things I look for when I'm sitting in my chair and looking at my design wall, is I will scatter especially strong colors like red mm-hmm. and gold. Mm-hmm. They need to usually be scattered across the surface. And sometimes I will take, let's say a block has 8 different fabrics in it, and I will make that block 4 times, and I may put the same 8 fabrics in different positions, and then I will put that fabric in 4 different quarters in the quilt. Mm-hmm. And then that's the only place I use those fabrics, so that the friends never touch each other.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You know,
so you don't really want the same fabric touching each other?
Touching each other.
Yeah.
So I will use it in 4 blocks, and I will use the same 6-8 fabrics in the 4 blocks. But when you scatter them and turn them different directions within the quilt, mm-hmm. then you don't notice it.
So you also told me, just to wrap up, that you don't really ever consider anything you have as like a leftover. Like you
absolutely
don't really have...
not. That's just a bag of potential material.
Yes, I love that, Lynn. That is so cool.
Well, you know, I do what I call mental health sewing, and I think we all should. We own that fabric. Why shouldn't we play with it? Mm-hmm. So when I'm having a bad day, I just go and make 4 patches or half-square triangles or 9 patches. Make easy-to-piece blocks and just pick fabrics that make your soul happy.
Yeah.
And as long as they have a contrast in value, then you can use them and you can accumulate. I have bags and bags around here. and a lot of them came from block trades.
Ah,
and
well, Lynn, this has just been incredibly fun. Your quilts are amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show. You can
yes.
visit Lynn at her website, which is her name, LynnRoddyBrown.com. If you will hold on, this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are going to be back right after this break and talk with Leah Day about machine quilting, and I'll see you then.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything. And we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Leah Day back this month. We are going to be talking about sort of how to kickstart yourself to do some free motion quilting and some tips and tricks about what to do to get you moving and using that foot on your machine and make your own quilts. So, hi, Leah. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Pat?
I am great. Can you remember back to when you first did a quilt, free motion to quilt? Was it like, did you love it? Do you remember what you thought?
Well, the first time I free motion quilted was in a class. It was the first class and only class I ever took on quilting. Uh-huh. And we had spent most of the class using our walking foot. And then kind of as an afterthought, the last 30 minutes of class, we put on our darting feet and tried free motion. And I'll be honest, you know, it was not pretty. It was really pretty horrible. And I felt completely out of control. I had no idea how to hold the quilt. I had no idea how to move it. You know, it literally is like learning how to write in a totally different way. You know, you have to kind of think of it that way. And so, of course, your brain's just going to kind of go, what?
Right.
and so it's not going to be pretty. My first several quilts that I quilted were, they were usable. But would they pass a critique from a quilt show judge? Absolutely not. They'd be crucified.
I know. I was so stubborn. When I wanted to learn, and I'm like you, my first few quilts were just horrific. I mean, but I could remember the one. Well, I can still remember it, thinking, oh, I think it clicked.
Yeah, absolutely. There's like a turning point where your skill, you kind of get comfortable. And the best way to get comfortable is just pick one design and just quilt it. Even if you can't quilt it, just keep trying those same shapes, the same repetitive movements. And eventually it will just kind of click. And it's almost like playing the piano. You know, you're kind of keeping two things in tune. With a piano, it's two hands and in your feet. With free motion quilting, you are regulating the speed and moving the quilt, and that's creating your stitch and your stitch quality. And so all of that together, you know, it's a lot to keep in tune. And so it is literally going to be something that feels very uncomfortable at the beginning. And is it immediately easy? It's certainly not like piecing or applique. But then if you continue to really work at it, it will suddenly click and you'll have it down pat. And it's like riding a bicycle in that sense. You'll never lose it. You get rusty, but you'll never lose it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's like it will get easier. And the right tools, we're going to talk here now about sort of the foot and that kind of thing, because the right tools are important. With my first attempts, my machine was a very inexpensive machine. The darning foot that came with it didn't give me enough room so that I actually couldn't freely move the quilt.
That's pretty common.
And that's a huge problem because people think they don't know it's them when really the tool is not that
Absolutely.
Good.
And, you know, most of the inexpensive darning feet, I mean, you were lucky to have a darning foot included with your machine. they often don't come with one and you have to go with a generic foot or, you know, an off-brand foot. And that's fine, too. But the thing you have to understand is those feet are not very well designed straight out of the package. So kind of one of the most popular videos on the site how to break your foot, how to literally take a pair of jeweler's pliers and bend some pieces back and attach a rubber band and clip some pieces open. And, it seems a little silly to have to go that far, but I started out the same way. I had a machine that had a really clunky foot. It was really big and bulky in front of me. I was struggling to see. I was struggling to be able to quilt what I wanted to quilt. And so I just went to my toolbox and pulled out some tools. That was a solid metal foot, so I had to pick up my hacksaw. And, you know, it's one of those things you can't let it, it's just a silly foot. Just don't let it intimidate you. You've got to make it work for you.
Now, where is your video at? Is they can find that on your site?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can find it on daystyledesigns.com and look for the free motion quilting foot. It's a generic foot, and the video will be right there. Because I sell the foot, I also have the video right there. So if you get it, you know exactly how to modify it.
Okay, so so that's the way for people to, if you have a machine where you really think it's your foot, you know, you don't have any
Absolutely.
Space under there, you know, you can't, you should be able to freely move your quilt when you're working and not be sort of tugging and straining with it.
Yeah, you really want the darning foot to hover, and you want it to hover where it's low enough that the quilt is not bouncing out of control, but high enough that you can't actually move the quilt. And unfortunately, most of these feet are designed to hop. That means that a little piece of metal kind of sets on your needle bar, and that causes the foot to hop up and down as you quilt. Not only is that distracting, it's not very well designed in the sense that just the hopping, it squishes your quilt when the needle is down, and then when it raises it, it's way too high and you're out of control. So in order to get decent looking stitches, you really have to kind of stitch fast, and a lot of people just really aren't comfortable stitching that fast.
Mm-hmm.
So this modification fixes that, so you have a foot that hovers, it stays in one place, and it's not distracting. And it's so much easier to quilt with a foot that is well designed and does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. So take a look at your foot, everybody. What do you tell people is a way to sort of get going? Because I find people who haven't free motioned recently or ever, you know, they don't want to mess up their quilt. That's
a big thing. Of course,
you know,
so don't do it on a quilt. Don't put it on a quilt.
Yay!
You know, pick up a layer cake. And I love layer cakes. They are the absolute perfect size for practicing free motion on. They're about a 10-inch square. If you don't want to buy pre-cuts, you can just get cut 10-inch squares of fabric and cut 10-inch squares of batting, layer that up, have a little practice sandwich. And honestly, I think that's a good way to start, even if you free motion quilt every day. It's a good thing to warm up every day at your machine, because it's literally a muscular thing. When you start cold, your stitches are not going to look as good. You have to kind of ease into it and get that movement, speed and movement ratio. You are literally balancing the speed of your machine that's controlled by your foot, the foot pedal, and the movement of your hands, which, of course, that's, you know, your arms, your hands, your fingers, that's all moving together. And it's that ratio. And the reason why people struggle to get into free motion is because it's not using a sewing machine in a traditional way. Typically, you know, piecing, applique, you're using a sewing machine. You're letting the feed dogs do their job. You're letting the machine do most of the work for you. In free motion, all that goes out the window. You're no longer using the machine in that way. And so don't expect it to be perfect. Don't expect it to be pretty the first time. Even if you are very good at piecing, that does not mean anything for free motion.
Right, so, yeah. You have to give yourself a break. You know,
absolutely.
Don't beat yourself up over everything. And you have the P word, the practice word.
And don't practice on that quilt that you just took 8 months to applique.
You know,
practice on some layer cakes. And more than anything else, if anyone is getting started right now, right this second, if you are piecing your very first quilt, then you better sit down and free motion quilt that first quilt, because then your skills are on the same level plane. Your piecing is probably not perfect. Your quilting will not be perfect. But the problem is that most people wait and wait and wait to get into free motion or quilt, you know, machine quilt at all. That just seems to be kind of the general routine, is you get really good at piecing or really good at applique. I'm not being offensive by saying that those are easier, but they are easier in the sense that you're using the machine in more traditional way. But, you know, as long as you kind of keep those skills growing at the same rate, then you'll never have that issue of being afraid to quilt a quilt that you pieced or appliqued. So if
perfect.
You're getting started right now, just go on ahead and jump in and quilt it. Don't worry about it being perfect. It's not. No quilt is perfect.
No. We don't have much time left. Can you give me like maybe two or three top things to get you started? You know, like a tool that maybe people could use?
Absolutely. Well, the absolute number one thing, I think, is a flatbed table. If you are quilting with your sewing machine up on top of your tabletop. Seriously, that is no fun. It made an enormous difference to drop my table down in a drop the machine down into a table. And there are affordable options. Just do a search for affordable sewing machine table or affordable mm-hmm. quilting table, and you will find tables that are under $300. You don't have to go with the cabinet. Once you get your table flush, a Supreme slider and gloves, Supreme mm-hmm. slider will help your quilt move a little bit smoothly and evenly over the surface. Gloves will increase your grip and allow you to actually control where that quilt is going. If you don't wear gloves, your hands are just sliding over the surface, and mm-hmm. you don't have that purchase and that control that you would have if you had something on your hands that will grip it much better.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I don't really wear gloves much myself, but I can totally see them being really, really helpful. Do you have one more item?
Actually, I do. Inside the machine, I use a little Genie Magic bobbin washer. I use this all the time. This is not just for free motion, but I started mm-hmm. using them because I saw such an amazing difference for my free motion quilting stitches. And it's basically a little washer that goes inside the bobbin case. You can use it on all machines, top loading or side loading bobbins. Mm-hmm. And it just fills up that little bit of extra space inside the bobbin case so the bobbin doesn't rattle around in there. And it reduces thread breaks. It makes the bobbin thread glide as smoothly and evenly as the top thread. I really see very, very few thread breaks once I started using bobbin washers in all of my machines. And I just, you stick it in and you forget about it. You know, you use it for quilting and piecing.
Thanks, Leah. This has been great information. And we're going to talk again next month.
Excellent. Look forward to it, Pat.
Okay, this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines. Go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And for the next half of the show, whole half of the show, I have author and fabric designer and teacher Nancy Mahoney back on the show. And Nancy works a lot in 30s fabric, so I thought it'd be really fun to have her come on and talk a bit about 30s, maybe get a little bit into more, the mechanics of making 30s fabrics work for you. And then she also has some other great tips that we'll hopefully get to about machine applique. So, hey, Nancy, how are you?
I'm good, Pat. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. So, Miss Nancy Mahoney, I would love to know when you started to use 30s fabric. Did it start right away in your quilting career?
It didn't. It really didn't. I was first drawn to, I started quilting back in the mid-70s, back before we really even had cotton fabrics.
Wow. And you had three fabrics then.
You know, back then we had a lot of browns and muted colors, and I was really drawn to that color palette for a long time. But I don't know, I guess when I started collecting quilts, and I've collected a lot of vintage quilts, and I love those 1880s quilts, but I started being drawn to the 30s quilts, and I just love that cherry palette in the 30s quilts. And once I started collecting them, the quilts, then I wanted to make them.
Yeah. So do you remember when there was like this massive craze of 30s fabric, the reproductions came out? Were you designing fabric then?
Not when Aunt Gracie's came out. Mm-hmm. Not at the very start when the Aunt Gracie's fabrics came out. I've been designing 30s fabrics for the last 10 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, so in the Gracie's things was probably
It goes back farther than
20
that.
20 years ago, maybe now?
I think so. Yeah,
that was, I've forgotten what line it was, but there was, I mean, everybody wanted to have it. It was sort of fresh and new and pretty and sweet, all rolled into one.
Yeah, it was real different. It was just so different than what everybody had been seeing, from the much more brown, darker kind of palette.
So how would you, let's talk about what makes a fabric a 30s fabric, because there's reproductions and there's fabrics that are inspired by 30s that is maybe not quite the same. How would you define a 30s fabric?
Well, a 30s fabric is sometimes it's confused with or is called, I shouldn't say confused, it's also called a feed sack fabric because the feed sack fabrics were very prominent during the 1930s period. And one of the things that's very typical of all 30s fabrics is most of them are kind of a medium to small scale. You don't see the real large-scale prints.
Okay.
The medium scale also kind of tends to be on the small side. Mm-hmm. Most of them are simple colors. A lot are just two colors or three colors. And you'll see a lot of conversationals.
Okay, conversational being that they have little images on them.
Right. We think of them as novelty prints now, and they're kind of the same thing. They have little, cats and rabbits and children and scissors and, just cute little fun things on the prints.
Yeah, I just saw one. A lady brought in, I had it on my blog the other day, showed me her grandmother's flower garden. And there was one conversational print that was golf clubs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very typical. Or you'd see little airplanes.
Oh, cute.
And a lot of them are... you see a lot of florals, but you also see geometric prints, and you see dots and stripes and, just a real variety of things, but it's all kind of scale and color. And color is really kind of your telling thing about a 30s fabric.
Now, does the 30s sort of blend over to what, to 40s, or is it really just that one era that's, the 30s?
Well, there was a definite palette of colors in the 30s. And there's a very distinctive green that's called the 30s green. There's a very distinctive pink that's really the 30s pink. Your blues range sometimes from a softer blue into a little bit darker blue. And there was lavender, and it's not purple.
Oh, yeah.
Lavender, kind of, yes. Yeah, they're all softer colors. They're all much softer colors.
And you don't see a lot of black or red or...
You see some red. You see just a very small amount of black or brown. Brown is another color you see very sparingly. And you'll see peach. You don't see really orange too much, but you see peach. It's kind of everything that's more on that soft pastel side. When it gets into the 40s, they get to be a little bit brighter.
Oh, okay. So if it sort of looks like the same kind of print but is a brighter palette, you've probably moved into a 40s style.
Correct, yeah.
Now, do you personally have trouble telling the difference between a reproduction and a vintage 30s fabric? I mean, do you look for that?
Well, you can. It can be difficult to tell the difference because they're, I use exactly what's in my collection of quilts. That's my inspiration for creating my fabric lines. So mine are true fabrics that you would have found in the 30s. Mm-hmm. And so if you were to put them next to a fabric, it probably would be difficult to tell them apart. The main telling thing would be the weave.
Okay. And so like if somebody wants to see one of your lines, so they can get a kind of a feel for the 30s because maybe they haven't, looked at them yet. Your website's nancymahoney.com, and you have a button that says fabrics.
Correct.
And so you've got Adeline up there right now.
Yeah, Adeline.
Adeline
was my great aunt.
Oh.
So it was named after my great aunt.
Neat. And so that gives a very, very classic 30s.
Yes.
Because you got a big floral and a little print with, watering cans and stuff and bows and buttons. Cute. So do you collect the feed sacks as well?
I have. I'm pretty bad.
It's for research, right, Nancy? It's research.
It is research. It is
designing
research. And I'm rescuing. I'm rescuing these things. So I just bought, not too long ago, I just bought some blocks that were, some are made and some are, some are finished and some aren't, some are in pieces then. But they're these blocks from the 30s that, were being sold off. You know, they were sold in an antique dealer's booth at a show and stuff. And, you know, I had to rescue them.
That's right. That's right. So what is your process to develop the fabric line? How do you sort of pull together what you want to have?
Well, I really start by just pulling out all my quilts. And I start looking for prints that I think would work well together. And a lot of times I'll make photocopies of them, because when you get lots of quilts out, it's hard to get them folded and, you know, and so you can see all the different little prints. And I have lots of blocks and tops and all kinds of things like that. So I pull out anything that I think might work, make a photocopy of a colored copy, and then I can lay them out together, and I try and look for a variety of scale. Just like you would with most collections, so that you have some prints that are a little bit larger, down to almost those little ditzy kind of prints.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure I've got some geometrics in there, and I want to make sure I have at least one or two that's a little novelty print.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then I kind of take from there.
So after you sort of have a selection of designs, what about the colors that you pick? Because yours are really true to the colors of the 30s.
Right. So then I try and balance my colors. You know, groups are smaller now than they used to be when I started in designing, and we could do a group of, you know, 50 prints, and now we try and do a group that's more like 25 prints. And so you try and balance the colors within that range of prints. So you have, instead of having three greens, maybe you only have two. But I try to make sure that I always have a couple prints in each color. Maybe have one brown or one black to kind of just bring in that little variation into it. And because I want to do applique, then I think about that as well, that I have something that I could use for leaves and something that I could use for stems and kind of plan ahead.
Yeah, that's always a good thing, because it's very hard if you've forgotten the green and you want to do flowers.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah.
It can be a challenge. Yes, we're going to have brown stems this time.
Yeah.
It's the unhappy garden.
That's... Yeah.
So when you plan a quilt then with these fabrics, what I find is a lot of times if I'm just using the prints, they're so tonal that I don't have any sort of like, you know, highs and lows in the pile. They're all sort of read the same value and tone. How do you adjust to make a really spectacular quilt?
Well, it took me a while to figure out that's why, you know, women in the 1930s used solid fabrics, not only because they were inexpensive, but because they needed them. And that's what really will make your quilt sing, is to have that place for your eye to rest and to have that solid color that the prints can play off of, because the 30s fabrics are almost all mediums.
They are. I've seen quilts that it's just you step back a few feet and it's just a big mush because there's no definition. What, besides white or cream, what solids do you like to pair up with?
I like to use a soft yellow or a pink.
Or pink.
And it really kind of depends on what the quilt is for. You know, if it would be a quilt that would be for a little boy, maybe making a little, you know, a crib quilt for a little boy, I probably wouldn't use pink, but I might use blue. You know, solid blue.
So are there shades of solids that are considered the 30s solids?
There are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they're that same color palette of being that green, that pink, you know, the blue, that soft blue.
And it's sort of like a Nile green, isn't it? That's the Nile green. It's it's sort of like seafoamy in a way.
Yeah, it's a little braid.
Yeah. Didn't they do like dishes and stuff in those shades too?
They do.
Yeah.
They do. The other green you'll see not as commonly is more of an apple green. So it's a little bit brighter green.
Oh, okay.
And I tend to use that green more because I just like the brightness of it more than the true Nile green from the 30s. But, it's fun that way.
So and, your book, go ahead.
I was going to say, and when I'm looking at colors, that's the other thing I look at, is to make sure that I have some designs that are two colors, so that you have primarily a darker background and maybe then a little leaf that's a cream color, or, you know, the motif itself is makes it a two-color print, but when you look at it from a distance, it would read as a solid and would be darker than the other prints.
Ah, okay. That might be a little bit like what I'm looking in your book, Treasures from the 30s.
Yes.
And there's the quilt called the Airship Propeller.
Yes.
And that one you've taken purple and green and cream. So it's just three colors in the quilt.
Right. But so, you can see some of the purples are much darker than the other ones.
Yes. It's really nice.
And that's what makes it interesting. And, you know, that's something that's carried over from all my other quilts is that you want to use a difference of value. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes your quilt interesting. And you have to just look for those prints. And when you find them, you buy them.
Yeah, because they're not going to come around again.
They're not.
No.
But 30s are very good for pre-cuts. If you want to buy fat quarters or fat eights, you know, you can just buy them and collect them. And then, you know, something like this, there's everyone is different, but you don't use that much of it.
Right, right. So you don't have to, you know, you can have a big collection of the purples, and they're going to work together. That's what I find, is that I can go from collection to collection. If they've been billed as a 30s line, they really do work together, even across manufacturers.
They do, because there was this one palette of colors that was very typical of all 30s colors.
What is the most unusual color that you've seen for maybe in one of your antique quilts?
Sometimes I've seen them that they're actually kind of a tan and red.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Very unusual. Yeah, it's very unusual. They're not a cream. They're actually a tan, and then the motif will be like in red. There'll be a little bit of blue with it.
Mm-hmm. So somebody didn't like pastels who made those antique quilts.
That's right. There's always maverick.
They're like, no. Give me the red. You know, that would be me. I'm always looking for the red 30s fabrics. I will buy them whenever I see them, so that because they're hard to find.
They are hard to find. Of course, I like red in anything, so it's, you know, I'm naturally drawn to the red fabric.
Yeah, right. And the black. Those, you know, if I see them, I'll collect them because I keep mine 30s all together pretty much. Do you mix your 30s in with other fabrics?
I don't. I keep mine all separate.
Yeah, that's the one line that, you know, I mix most of fabrics together, but 30s, I just keep them to use in 30s quilts so that, you know, that'll be.
And I do that pretty much, although I recently used one that was kind of a black and cream print, and I used it on the back of the quilt because of, you know, it matched what was going on in the front of the quilt, which was not 30s.
Oh, okay.
But once in a while, you know, if it's just the right shade, it's the right fabric, I might mix it in. But for the most part, if I'm making a 30s quilt, they're all 30s fabrics. And I'll go through that period where I'm making, particularly if it's for a book, and then I'm on to something else.
Well, we're going to take a break, Nancy. We'll be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to Nancy Mahoney about 30s fabric. So, Nancy, have you ever done your 30s fabric on like a dark, like a black or something?
I have.
Yeah, that seems like that would be really pretty.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, there. It really makes the colors pop when you put it on a dark fabric like that. And so, yeah, I've done that, and it is fun.
Now, in traditional 30s, you know, feel quilts that, you know, you're designing quilts now that have a feel and showcase those fabrics when you write a book like the Treasures from the 30s. And you have pieced and applique. So let's talk a little bit about applique. You have a really, really sweet bellflowers quilt. I really love this one. It's I'm waiting for spring.
Yes. Well, and that one was done as fusible applique.
Okay. And you do you do several types of appliqué, and one of the I wanted to talk about your invisible machine appliqué. Could you do this quilt like that?
You could. It would be a little bit more complicated because of having to turn the corners on the leaves.
Okay.
But you certainly could do it. I mean, it would be a technique you could use to do that. The curved appliqué that I like to do with the invisible thread. I use that for the airship propellers quilt.
Okay.
And that one's really easy because you have these nice, gentle curves that would be typically pieced, and I don't want to piece them.
Right, right. So tell me the process. So these are like a wedge shape that then you're appliquing down, like a pie.
Right.
You know, the blade of a propeller, think of that, but it's a pie shape, a slice of pie.
Well, what I do is I make a template out of heat-resistant mylar or template plastic, but you need to make sure it's heat-resistant.
Yeah.
The main thing, the no-melt mylar.
Right. And that usually you have to get at a quilt shop, right?
You have to get that at a quilt shop. Or you can actually can get it, some people carry it online, but, you know, you can look to your quilt shop for that.
Mm-hmm.
And for this particular pattern, on all my patterns, if you need to include the seam allowance, it is included on the pattern. And where the seam allowance is not included, that's going to be the edge of your template that you're going to turn a seam allowance over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important, and one of the tips I want to tell everybody is that you need to make sure that your curves are smooth, and that's what's really going to be help you be successful in your applique, is that make sure when you have a curve that it's smooth, you don't have a bump or anything, because you're going to transfer that onto your applique.
So the Templar, this plastic, needs to be smooth. So if you're cutting it with scissors and it's got a little, you know, spot that's bumping up, you need to smooth it off.
You need to smooth it off. You need to take a little bit of sandpaper and just gently, like even an emery board, and just rub that to where you've got a nice smooth curve.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So after I've got my template prepared and I put it on the wrong side of my fabric, I add the seam allowance to that curved edge. Then I just use regular starch. I like to dilute it a little bit with water. And you could use like a cotton swab or a stencil brush, but I like to use those little foam pounces that you can get at the craft store. They're like the quarter-inch ones that you'd use for stenciling.
Oh, okay. Like maybe with a handle on it?
Yes.
Okay.
They hold the starch. They hold a lot of starch.
Oh.
So you can just dip that in your starch and paint it on your seam allowance. It's kind of fun. You're just painting, and then I just iron it over the edge of the template.
Hmm. Okay. And does it warp the plastic after a while, or?
It'll get a little bit curved, but you just want to press along the edge. You don't want to press the whole template.
Okay.
You just want to press along the edge so that you're just pressing in the seam allowance. I also use a little bit of double stick tape on my template to hold my template in place. So that I don't have to, you know, it's like a third hand kind of thing.
Yeah, that's an excellent tip. I had never heard that before.
Yeah, it works really well. And you know, you can use it many, 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 many times. And then if it starts where it's not holding anymore, you just stick another piece of tape on there.
It's a cheap thing.
I buy lots of double stick tape.
Oh.
So once I've got it pressed, I take my template off, and then I just use water-soluble fabric glue in the seam allowance, dab a little dots in there, and then I just glue-based everything in place. And you start just like you would with fusible, with your, you know, your pieces that are on the bottom, and layer up towards the top. And once I have everything ready to applique, I can sit down at my machine and then do all the stitching.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so everything is laid out. That's the sort of the key there.
Yeah.
You're not doing just one piece and then going to get something else and sticking it on and stitching it. So.
No, I unless something has to be, unless there's a specific reason where something is laying underneath, mm-hmm. you know, I just lay everything on top and then just stitch it one time.
Yeah, I like that. That's what I do too, because it's like the whole picture is there.
Yeah. Definitely, and it's much easier to do it that way. Once you set up your machine, then you can just do all your machine applique at one time.
Mm-hmm. So then what about the stitch?
Well, other people use, and there's lots of people who do a similar technique, but they use either a zigzag stitch or the blind hem stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who aren't familiar with the blind hem stitch, it's the one that takes a little V, and then it takes like three straight stitches, and it takes another little V.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that stitch. I don't like that. You can see that V.
Rebel you.
I know. So I use the same stitch I would do if I'm doing fusible applique. I use the blanket stitch.
Oh.
Because it just takes one little bite of your fabric, just like when you're hand appliquing.
Right. So you just take the stitch length, the zigzag number down really small?
Very small. Like one.
Wow.
Or 0.9.
Yeah.
And if I think I see it too much, I might make it 0.8. You have to practice. It takes practice to where you can really see that, because it's a tiny stitch.
Mm-hmm.
But with practice, people look at it and they think you did it by hand, I swear.
Oh, wow. That's really neat. I never thought of doing that. What are your spacing between your bites?
Well, I leave it pretty much what it's defaulting on the machine. Sometimes if it's a real small circle, like a 2-inch circle, I might bring it down so that I don't, you know, so that it curves around it a little bit easier and I'm not having to pivot quite as much. But, you want it like an 1/8 inch or so, you know?
Yeah.
Think of it, you're just mimicking your hand stitch.
Mm-hmm.
So I use invisible thread on the top. The other thing I do is I use a 60/8 sharp needle. So you're making a very small hole.
Mm. That's important.
That's important. Yeah.
You're just sort of snagging a couple of the threads.
That's all.
And it's all turned under, so it's not going to fray because you have seam allowance turned under. Yeah.
And I use a cotton thread in the bobbin, and I match it to my background generally. So if I was doing it on a black fabric, my background was black, I would use a black thread in my bobbin. If my background is light colored, then I'd use a light color in my bobbin.
Oh, that is so cool. I'm going to have to try this.
You should.
I know. It's just that prep part that, you know, you have to turn all the edges under. But then it's a little more durable, you know, possibly than fusible because there's no raw edge. So
there's no raw edge. But it's like, you know, and there's prep work with fusible. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just a trade-off.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I was working on quilts for a new book that's coming out in November. It's really based on this technique. But the new book title is Simple Circles and Quick Curves.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I was traveling, I would take my template and my fabrics, and, you know, every hotel room has an iron, so I would take my starch, and I would just, I would be painting my starch and pressing my template, so, you know, and getting all my pieces prepared and glue basted in place. When I got home, then I could just sit down and sew.
There you go. That's perfect. Well, I'm going to have to try this, Nancy. That is just really, really cool. So let's talk about, you have some projects out on allpeoplequilt.com. You just put in Nancy's name, Nancy Mahoney. Tell me a little bit about the curved table topper that's out there, that pattern.
Isn't that fun?
Yes,
that's a fun pattern.
It.
Well, you know, Pat, not only do I collect vintage quilts, but I also collect the patterns that would have been printed in the newspaper during the 30s.
How big is your house?
Not big enough, I have to tell you. So this actually is a pattern that would have been published in the Kansas City Star paper in 1930. They called it Rose Dream. And when they reprinted it in 1938, they changed the name and called it Broken Squares.
Hmm.
So that's what a lot of my books have been based on. The 330s books have been based on patterns that you would have found in the newspapers or sent in your 10 cents mm-hmm. and gotten the pattern back during the 30s.
Wow. You have another one that you can just tell me about because, you know, we have just a minute or so left, but you do a class called Dancing with Dots.
Yes. And that's, again, using the starch applique technique.
Yeah.
And people learn how to do it. We do an arc. We put it's a four-patch block that has an arc in it so that you form a ring from the arcs. Mm-hmm. And then there's also just a circle. So you learn these two different ways of doing the starch applique, not only on an arc, but on a circular piece, entire circle.
Ah. So that's probably a really good, you know, repetitive thing. So you kind of get it down with
Yes. And you can make it scrappy or you can make it, you know, using fabrics like I did when it was in the magazine.
Right. And that's all on the All People Quilt website. You can, when you do, just put Nancy Mahoney in and the patterns will come up. Now, you speaking of teaching, you travel and teach. Is your schedule on your website?
It is.
Yay.
Under teaching. Yes.
So do you travel a lot?
I don't travel as much as some, but I'm gone about 1 week out of a month.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's, you know, like in May, I'll be teaching in Orlando, but that's just an overnight trip, and then I'll be off to Quilt Market for, you know, the week in Spring Market in Portland. And the trip after that, I'll go to Wichita, Kansas in June.
Yeah, so you're getting out once or twice a month. That's pretty good. That's people can find you and come take a class.
That'd and that's fun. I love teaching, don't you?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah.
I love
teaching's
it.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's fun meeting all the other quilters.
Yeah, that's what I like, seeing all the different people and seeing what they do with your designs. Isn't that the best part?
It is the best part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is fun.
So,
the travel part's not that great, but the being there
right.
is fun.
I know. Anytime you have to haul and lug and get delays, you know, that part's not fun. But the rest of it's amazing. So tell me one last thing before we end. What kind of quilts do you look for when you go to a show? You know, what draws your eye?
Oh, it's generally applique quilts, you know, or really anything that's really well done, to tell you the truth, anything that's really well done. And
yes.
There's so many amazing quilts out there. To see quilts in any kind of a show is mm-hmm. just so much fun, to see the different things that people are doing, the colors that people are using, different techniques.
Yeah.
It's just so much fun to expose yourself to all these different things.
I agree. Thank you, Nancy, for being here.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's been fun.
Yes, I've learned so much. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Come back next week, and we'll be here again, and we'll have even more fun. So visit us out at allpeoplequilt.com. Visit us on our Facebook page, Twitter, and check out everything we have on the website, from free patterns to videos to all kinds of nice articles about quilting. See you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.